This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Good evening and welcome to Dystopical. It's been a week since we've spoken to you, and last week we promised you that we were going to talk about lesbians and porn, but we're actually not going to talk about that tonight.
Kat, you're such a tease.
I know. I can't help it. It's just, you know, who I am. Anyway, you know, some other stuff has come up in the meantime, and it's really kind of important stuff that's caught the media attention and is really happening on a national level. So instead, what we're going to do is we're going to talk about homophobia in schools and in youth.
And this evening, we'll be talking to Tess Barrero.
Hi, how are you going?
We're doing good.
Hi, Tess. How are you doing? Thank you so much for coming in.
And Jen Sainsbury, who works for the Foundation for Young Australians, and she has just completely stepped in last minute to talk to us, so both of them are very welcome and very appreciated on the show.
Yeah, and Jen's a researcher into developing collaboration practice for combating homophobia in schools, which is something that's actually really important and probably dear to all our hearts, anyone that has, you know, been gay and been in high school, which is probably all of us, really. So it's going to be a great show. It might be a little deep. And
Tess, did you want to maybe just introduce why we picked you to be on the show?
Okay, well, the girls asked me to come on a couple of days ago or yesterday or this morning.
Hush now.
I grew up in Melbourne and came out relatively young and had some very interesting experiences, so I thought it'd be fun to talk about it.
Really fun, even.
Absolutely. Yeah, definitely.
Great. Well, I'm looking Bear forward to all. That.
Yeah, well, look, I think it's going to be fun for you to talk about it as well. Because, you know, I've met you before and I know what you like. So, look, as we always say, what we talk about on the show are our views, they're our experiences. So if you have different experiences, if you disagree, if you think our views are actually just ridiculous, we don't care. That's fine. Just call us, or you can write in, or you can email in. You can text 0427JOY949. You can Facebook us at Dystopical, which is DYSTOPICAL. Or you can email us at dystopical@joy.org.au.
Thank you. And you've been listening to Dear Dystopical with Fareen and Kat. And we just played All the Things She Said by Tattoo and You've Got the Love by Florence and the Machine. And might I just say that Kat and I did not make the playlist for tonight. In fact, we have no idea who any of these bands are.
Because they're really, really old.
But in the spirit of talking about young people, we decided to play young people music. So young people, I hope you like it. And old people, just please tolerate it.
Because that's what we're doing.
So I just wanted to, you know, introduce why it is that we're talking about bullying and homophobia in schools. Just last week, the New York Times, The Times
Magazine.
Thank you.
Time Magazine.
I am a little bit dyslexic sometimes. The Time Magazine put out a feature article on bullying and schools and suicides in the U.S. And it's been called by various different bodies as an epidemic. They say that in this very terrible sort of GFC climate, Obama has asked to increase the anti-bullying program's budget by 12%, which is very telling of how bad the problem is. The theories are that it could be technology. You don't have to spit in someone's face or hold them down anymore. You can pay something on Facebook or Twitter and basically just shatter someone's privacy. They also, the article also goes on to say that one of the major problems is that we just don't have enough research or enough data on why this is happening, or is it increasing, or is it just because we're getting better data? So we'll be talking to Jen Sainsbury later about that stuff. And I guess one of the other sort of things that is why we're talking about this today is there was a really large conference at Melbourne University called Confronting Homophobia in Our Schools.
I can proudly say was hosted by my workplace.
Excellent. And it was basically about preparing pre-service and beginning teachers to build safer schools in Victoria, which is an amazing and I think innovative initiative.
Look, I agree. And so much has been in the media recently about the horrible stuff that's happened with so many teens committing suicide. There's a lot I could say about that, especially, look, I know there's been a lot of focus on gay or perceived gay children committing suicide. It doesn't even touch on what happens to transgender children, which is something else altogether. I believe I read somewhere recently that during the time that there was a media coverage about one of the perceived gay suicides, two transgender children committed suicide. But this is something that still doesn't get covered in mainstream media. However, I still think it's a positive step that at least LGBTIQ stuff is being covered on a big scale. And look, it is being covered on such a big scale that I think it would be, you'd almost have to be locked indoors and with the radio and the television off and not speaking to anyone to not have heard about the It Gets Better campaign. It's all over YouTube, it's all over Facebook. Even President Obama weighed in just last week. It was actually started, it's actually a YouTube campaign, which is bizarre enough and kind of great enough in itself, by the US media pundit and journalist Dan Savage. He decided to start a YouTube campaign about gay teens. It's called the It Gets Better Project. You can't possibly have missed it. Millions of people have now viewed it on YouTube. Various celebrities have made their own video, and even President Obama has made his own video, and this is all up on YouTube. It's basically all about telling teens that it, you know, things are hard now, but eventually it'll get better. There's also a lot of other stuff happening as well. Last week was the Wear Purple Day. And once again, it was one of those viral marketing phenomenons. It was created by some girl in Canada on Facebook. Millions of people got involved. And people were encouraged to wear purple, which I have to say I hate purple, but anyway, the point is
purple
great.
Hater. Purple hater.
Yeah, I'm a purple hater. It makes me feel uncomfortable as a colour. But
I
anyway,
love it.
Yeah, I know you do. anyway. And this was to be respectful of the people that had, you know, died because they were gay or had been perceived as gay or been treated in a really horrible homophobic way in the last few months.
Can I just say, I went to a school that wore purple uniform, and
that's really
I did,
really,
yeah.
I'm so excited. Which school was that?
It was Wesley College. I didn't wear purple on Purple Day, not because I don't agree with what it was saying, but I actually really hate that colour.
I really hate
a lot,
it too.
I know.
Perhaps wear a violet or a magenta?
No. For some people are really disturbed by that colour.
I don't know if it was my experiences in high school, but I certainly don't like it now, and I absolutely refuse.
Great. Let's make a pact. We're never going to wear purple together.
Let's do it.
Okay.
And on that day, I will wear purple. Ew. Which is most days, actually.
Okay. Look, that's fascinating, and I'm sure you're all fascinated by our colours we like and don't. Like, if anyone cares, my favourite colour is yellow. However,
yes. So back to young adults and homophobia, Kat. Please.
We are actually going to talk about that in much more detail and much more intellectually than I like yellow. I like purple. I don't like purple.
Whatever. That's a fun conversation.
But
too.
First of all, we're going to cut to a track.
And welcome back. You were listening to Rihanna with Russian Roulette. And
it's a great song. I love it.
Why?
I wanted to say something really intelligent then, but I just like it.
Get your groove on. You do.
It gets your rocks off.
No, kind of hot.
Rihanna gets... Oh, my. Okay. Yeah, okay, enough said.
Moving right along.
Yeah. Talking about rocks and knowing when they get off and who they get off with, Tess and Kat... Nice segue, right?
Yeah, that was a great segue. Yeah, well yeah. Done.
Thanks, I try. Tess and Kat and I will now be talking just about... our experiences of homophobia coming out in high school, if we did, what the reactions of other people, friends, family, blah, blah, blah were like. And hopefully you won't all be crying by the end of this episode.
Well, you know, I think everyone has very different experiences. Some people sailed through, some people didn't. You know, one of the things that I find really interesting about a queer women's experience is that we're all really different. We're all made in different ways, and although we identify in this same kind of category, we're not the same. So, Farin, why don't you start? What was your experience of coming out or bullying or homophobia in high school?
And just before I start, I want to say that this really, I want this to be a dialogue. And, you know, if you feel like something resonated with you or you want to tell us something, then, you know, just please feel free to text us at 0427JOY94.949, Facebook us at Dystopical, or email us at dystopical, that's dystopical, at joy.org.au. We would love to hear from you. Okay, and back to me, which I love. Right, so experiences of homophobia in school, and I just want to preface this with saying I grew up in Tanzania where homosexuality is illegal, lesbians are murdered, gay men not so much because they sort of, yes.
I remember talking to you about this and you said that you didn't know one out lesbian in Tanzania, is that right?
Correct. I didn't know one out lesbian in the whole country, and this was 1 year ago when I started looking into, you know, the needs of lesbians and queer women in developing countries. But that's a topic we'll sort of cover more on another day. I guess there wasn't any, I mean, I didn't come out in high school because I didn't know what gay was. Like, there was no gay culture, there was no gay people as far as I knew, and of course they were there, they just didn't know it or didn't want to talk about it or whatever it was. But I just remember that I just wanted to kiss girls, and the first time and I was like, they're so pretty and I want to touch them. And the only time I could really do it was when I was totally wasted, and you know when you're like jumping in a pool with friends and you're just like, hey, come over here, buddy, and then you and that was the first time like I had a kiss with a girl, and then it was all over the school. And at that point, my, are you doing something shitty with the mics, dude, buddy?
Stop. No, I'm just turning you down, dude.
All right, am I talking too loud? Anyway, my sister, who was going through an evil period, told my mother, and
really?
And my mom was like, did you kiss a girl? And I was like, no.
I would never do
as
that.
As if I would ever kiss a girl. But I do remember that there was this one boy from South Africa, obviously a little bit evolved than, you know, what we were in Tanzania at that time.
Cultured, of course.
Of course, of course. You know, South Africa, known for its rights and all that. was wearing blue nail polish and, you know, like just, you know, had a certain walk about him. And at that age, I could identify that, you know, there's something a little bit different about this guy. So I remember going up to him one day, obviously also drunk at a bar, going, are you gay? And him just being completely shocked, and his friends. And yeah, that was that for them.
Did that ruin your popularity forever?
No, he was just like, what is wrong with that weird homophobic girl, or something in his head. And all I really wanted to do was like make friends with like the other weird dude.
Oh, that's a really sad story.
Tess, tell us about yours.
Okay, well, mine was slightly different than that. I grew up in Melbourne, so very close to where we all are right now.
I know so few people that actually grew up in civilization.
I know, right?
Tanzania, Tasmania.
Tasmania, yeah, I was about to say. Yeah, exactly the same thing. So I went to a private school in the suburbs, grew up in the suburbs. I came out when I was about 14 years old to my best friend at the time, whose reaction was, good, I'm not, but good. And then, of course,
I think my best friend went, "No, you're not."
Really excellent. Yeah. It's like really no. supportive. Yeah,
no,
definitely.
No, I am.
You have to prove it. Like, I've done the test. I've got the card. Yeah. You know,
here's my test result.
It spread like wildfire, basically. Of course, it does it at 14 years old in school, and the guys, the popular group, I suppose, and they all had the girlfriends that, of course, I was completely in love with. And they weren't very
that
nice.
That doesn't sound like you, Tess.
I went falling in love with inappropriate people, definitely not me. I went through very, very, very awkward stages of being, I suppose, bullied, spat on, and, you know, I was accused for liking their girlfriends. I didn't think I was that obvious. The school I went to had no sort of sexual education in place to help us. I don't ever remember the teachers saying to us, okay, great, so if any of you are gay, it's fine. Those of you who aren't, these kids do exist, and it's something that's acceptable and something that you guys have to understand is acceptable. We never had that conversation.
Do you wish that had happened? Would that have helped you? Would that have helped the school?
I think so. Well, me and my sister came out within weeks of each other.
You and your sister are gay?
Yeah, we are.
Oh, man.
She's a year younger than me. So
are there actually three of you out of four?
There are. So my littlest sister, the 14-year-old, she only just came out a couple of months ago. I'm so proud of her. I really am. And I've won so much money on the bets. So I'm happier about that.
You have bets going on in your family on who's gay and who's not.
Isn't that sad?
Like, no, it's not sad. But
no, I'm a bit
what
jealous.
Are their parents like? Are they just like, fuck, let's not have any more kids? Well, are they, like, totally
that
supportive?
That was the thing with coming out in high school is home is supposed to be a safe haven from your high school, and your high school is supposed to be a safe haven from your home life. It's places where you need somewhere to escape, and unfortunately, when you do go to a private school, it's hard to have a place to escape. So that's what I found was very awkward until I sort of got older and found my autonomy, was actually trying to find a place where I could just be me. So
homophobia and claustrophobia, nice one.
I know, I just like to be free and naked as well.
Thank you for the information.
Anyone that's listening and hasn't had the pleasure of meeting Tess.
Yeah. She's quite a looker.
Yeah, she's very good looking, and she'd probably like to meet you naked. My story's a little different. I've talked about it before on air.
And it's going to have to be a little short as well.
Yeah, that's
so
right.
Sorry.
So I will cut this short. I went to Catholic school, and I'm from Tasmania. Yay. And I guess I realized I was gay when I was about 12 or 13. I first slept with a girl when I was, I think, about 13. But we didn't just sleep together. We used to do, like, quite a lot of stuff together. And that went on for a while. And I wanted to keep it going, and I hadn't really thought about it. And then suddenly she was, like, not into it and weird about it. And it finally occurred to me that there was something wrong with me, and because I really wanted to keep doing it, and she really didn't. And I felt so disgusting and so wrong and so completely guilty that I just promised myself that I would stop thinking about it. And I did a really good job of that. I didn't think about it again for about 15 years. In the meantime, I managed to sleep with quite a few women. However,
not thinking about it, of course.
I wasn't thinking about it. You know, I just did. You know, I went to drama school. Whoops. And that's just what you do. And then it was actually, I was probably 30 before I realized, look, you know, I'd never identified as being straight because I'd always known I wasn't. But if anyone ever asked, I'd always said I was bisexual. And I guess I was about 30, maybe a little bit older, before I realized, look, you know what, that's crap. I'm actually not bisexual. I've never been bisexual. I've never been that into men. I'm actually gay. And then it wasn't until then that I actually remembered all that stuff that I'd done at 12 and 13 with this girl. Ironically, she had never forgotten it. She is straight. She has like four kids now. I've seen her since. We get along really well. I was the one with the problem. I didn't have external homophobia. Nobody picked on me. I kind of picked on myself. So I kind of think it's interesting what we do both to ourselves and what is done to us by society and what we think is acceptable and not acceptable. And, you know, I feel like I've talked about myself enough. So we're going to go to a song now.
And thank you for listening in. That was Untouched by the Veronicas, who, and Tess, you might know more about this, are bisexual.
I'm so happy to say that I don't.
Oh, great. Okay, excellent. So there was some, like, gay stuff with them. I have no idea what it actually was. Anyway, we have on air this evening Jen Sainsbury, who just did a marathon, like, finishing this immense sort of conference today, confronting homophobia in our schools, and agreed very last minute to talk to us about her work, which is at the Foundation for Young Australians, looking at best practice around the world and how to challenge homophobia, and particularly in the areas of faith-based schools. So I hope I've done the introduction some justice, Jen, but welcome to the show and thank you again.
Thanks very much. It's I have a cool job when you say it like that. It's fantastic.
It is a cool job.
Yes.
So, Jen, you've been doing all this research. What kinds of things have you found out?
Well, I guess I've been really lucky. I got what's called a Churchill Fellowship, so it supports Australians to go overseas and learn from international best practice in their area of professional passion and interest. So I got to spend a fair bit of time working with international leaders in creating change in schools, and really what struck me is how much work there is going on overseas. Like, what's happening in the UK and the USA is really incredible. Young people are so active and so involved in advocating for and shaping change that's happening in schools. And there are some really fantastic projects and programs happening that I think we can learn a lot from.
Sorry, and so Jen, what kind of things have you found out?
And, like, what do you think needs to be done, like, in order to combat this?
I think what would be fantastic to happen in Australia, and it is beginning to happen, is we need to cut through some of this debate about whether we should or shouldn't be addressing homophobia in schools. I think the mandate is really clear, you know. We know, the research tells us, that a lot of young people have a hard time when they're in school based on their sexual or gender diversity or expression, and it doesn't have to be that way. So I think the first step is to acknowledge and embrace the fact that we can and need to do better in our schools. I think we need to find a better way to support young people to create change. But I think we also need to bring this issue to the fore as something that the community can get behind and support, whether it's from the lesbian, gay, bisexual and trans community, or whether it's from the broader community. Because I think often homophobia and the kind of discrimination that we do see affects a lot of people, and a lot of people feel connected to the issue. And I feel like we have a real opportunity in Australia to bring people together and say, let's make a change here.
And I totally agree, and I think that the conference or the workshop today was an indication that this is an area of, you know, sort of almost emergency in terms of the health of young people and the well-being of young people. The number of people that attended the conference, but that's still just the tip of the iceberg in terms of who is being trained and what they're doing about it, and, you know, curriculums and blah, 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 blah. And, you know, I'm sure the list goes on. But what do you think that young people, members of the queer community, and I guess schools can do, practically speaking?
I think that, you know, it's stuff we all know. It's that positive and normative discussion, making young people know that it's okay if they're exploring their sexual diversity or gender identity, that people love them for who they are and that they don't need to conform to this idea of what's normal or what's right. And there are many ways that we can do that. And there's some excellent practice that is happening in Australia. I have to acknowledge there are teachers and schools and young people who are really fighting the good fight in this area. But I think as a community, we need to get behind these people and say, yes, we believe this is important too. Today was fantastic. We had, you know, hundreds of pre-service and beginning teachers, so people who are at the beginning stages of their teaching career, who came together because they wanted to know more about how they can get involved in confronting homophobia and supporting young people. But I think it's also really indicates that for some teachers and some young people, this stuff is really, really hard work, and it's getting that message out there loud and clear that this is something that we need to do in our schools. and that we know how to do it, but it's cutting through that uncertainty and some fear that there is often in school communities about this work.
And so you say that there's some great, you know, schools that are coming on board. You're talking about the growing momentum. And just to, you know, push an envelope, who's not at the table?
I'm sorry, I can't hear you very well.
Sorry. The question, can you hear me better now?
That's better.
Okay, so the question was, so you're saying there's momentum and the schools are getting into it and obviously the government is supporting it and... And just to push the envelope, who is not at the table?
I guess when I look around at the fantastic stuff that's happening in other countries that I would love to see in Australia is I would really like to see some support from corporate Australia. I look at the UK and the USA, and there are some fantastic initiatives there that are being supported by multinational corporations who are putting their organisational capacity and their brand and their power behind this work and saying, we believe in diversity and we believe in supporting it in our schools. And that would be a fantastic thing to see happen in Australia. Mm. And also, I think we need to find new ways to reach out to religious and faith-based communities and find a way to make sure that we are providing safe and inclusive school environments for all of our young people.
Okay, and thanks for that. I think that's really interesting information. As we were chatting to some of our, you know, friends and colleagues about this particular issue, one of my colleagues asked, what do you think about, you know, the way that sexual and reproductive health is currently taught in high schools? Do you think that the focus on, you know, heteronormativity and reproductive health rather than who it's okay to love and how to love, you know, has an impact on that? And Tess was talking about that too, that, you know, she never got any of that information while she was in school.
And look, I think we don't do a very good job about talking about sex with young people in Australia more broadly. I think some schools do great work around their sexual and reproductive health curriculum, and some schools don't. I think a lot of young people get a fairly average sexual health education in our schools. So that is one thing that we can improve. And I think that sexual and gender diversity can be much better represented in that sexual health curriculum. The policies are in place, the frameworks are in place, but, you know, it's still a little bit scary for some teachers to do that work. But I think also in schools, we need to make sure that this stuff isn't just being left to sexual health teachers. We need to make sure that all teachers are representing LGBT people in positive ways, and that particularly behaviour management and homophobic language and bullying is being dealt with effectively and appropriately. So I think dealing with it in sexual health is really important, and we know that, and we can definitely improve it, but it's not the only place that we need to see sexual and gender diversity represented in schools.
Thanks, Jen, so much. And, you know, you don't have the visual, but Tess over here is just giving me a major thumbs up about what you've just said.
I got very excited just then when you mentioned about the language and homophobic language, and kids don't even know that they're being homophobic, and they are. And it's something that I'm trying to teach my little sisters and myself as well, because, you know, you slip up, don't you? So I think that it's really important not to use.
I know, and in our household, we're, you know, we always use the... That's so gay. Thing.
You're so that is so gay,
right? But you know,
we're trying to be ironic.
Yeah, but people don't get that when we're out in public, and maybe we should reconsider our language in the household and outside it. Anyway, Jen, I just wanted to say thank you again so much for, you know, stepping up and doing this last minute and all the great work you're doing. And I just wanted to ask if there's anything that you wanted to say that we hadn't covered in the questions.
I guess just if there are young people and teachers out there who are listening, or other members of the community who are interested in doing more and knowing more about what's happening in schools, check out our new project, which is called Safe Schools Coalition Victoria. It's a partnership between the Rainbow Network and the Foundation for Young Australians, and the Department of Education has kindly given us some funds, which is fantastic. And we really are trying to step up and create some change, and we'd love to hear from people and get them involved.
And we will we'll put a link to that on our Facebook page.
I was going to say, do you actually have a website or anything?
But yeah, we do.
You covered that. Brilliant.
Yeah, yep. Right. It's if you Google us, we're right there. Safe Schools Coalition Victoria.
Thank you so much, Jen.
No worries.
Hopefully we'll talk to you again in the future and hear some really good news.
Sounds great. Have a good night.
Thank you. And welcome back to Dystopical on Joy 94.9. We've hit that point in the show where we do Dear Dystopical. This is our agony aunt column, or, you know, the bit that we talk about angsty issues. And tonight we're talking about
that
homophobia.
That is so emo of you.
You know, I have my moments.
Aren't you proud I know that word?
I'm proud.
Thanks,
I'm proud.
Thanks.
I saw you Googling it on the break, though. Urban Dictionary for emo.
Exactly. And, you know, I'm wearing black eyeliner, so I feel like I'm qualified to talk about, you know, emo stuff.
Yeah, and I'm wearing hot pink, so, you know.
So you're not. But anyway, you're going to lead this section. Yay. So tonight we're talking about homophobia in schools and homophobia in youth and the way that people deal with this or not deal with this and sometimes the tragic consequences. So, Fareen, what do you got for us?
Well, Kat, we had the opportunity today to talk about queer issues at schools with some people that have firsthand personal and professional knowledge of it. And do you want to talk about the interview you did today with our very courteous Yima?
Ah, yes, of course. So I think we mentioned earlier for those people that weren't listening then, today was like a huge conference on tackling homophobia in schools. And afterwards, Farin and I spoke to some participants. And one of the participants that I spoke to was a woman called Emma, who's both a lesbian and a teacher.
Thanks, we just outed you in case you're in the closet, buddy.
She said it was fine.
She's listening, by the way.
She had a couple of, a couple of interesting things to say. And one of them was about her coming out experience, and I wish we had more time to talk about that. Because when she came out in high school to the school welfare officer, she was told that she was just going through a phase.
And you know what? I feel like we need to dedicate just a few shows to coming out.
I know.
Because, I mean, it's such a recurring theme, and we'll have her on for that
one.
Yeah,
she said that actually delayed her actual coming out for quite a few
years. I think just so many people know better than us what we are, you know. No, well, you're not, but is what your experience was. And
No, you're just, like, you're imagining it.
Oh, look, thanks for telling me.
Look, I'm Phew. 30 and my mom is still like, it's a phase.
Well, I'm 37 and my mother still likes to say, well, you know, you have to experiment.
And experimentation is good. It's just that I know my sexuality now.
No, it's just a long process. Anyway, so Emma was saying that as a teacher, she finds it really important to challenge homophobic behaviour, not just as a lesbian, but as someone who's a role model for other for students and for teenagers. And what she said that what she did was that when people, you know, bully other people, and not necessarily in physical ways, but by saying things like, oh my God, that's so gay, that she makes a point of explaining to them what that language means and how that might actually impact upon other people. And she thinks that actually has some success, that in making students actually think about what they're saying and what, you know, they consider to be normal.
And, you know, whilst we, you know, talk about and, you know, well, I'm not going to use the word criticize, but explore the situation in Australia and, you know, and often, you know, talk about what the challenges are here, the reality is that we're often, we are actually so much more, I guess, progressed in this particular issue than other countries. And we were talking also to two master's degree students in public policy from Bangladesh, and we asked them what was it like in school, could girls kiss girls and could boys kiss boys, and their simple answer was no. You would get whipped by your teacher, then you would get whipped by your parents,
and then you would get whipped by your relatives.
And, you know, Asian families, they're big, so that's a lot of whipping. So, and then I said, so what happens after that? Like, surely you don't repress this stuff. Like, and what the situation, I guess, is that people live double lives. They live with their friend for, you know, 50 years. Tess, what do you think? Like, what do you wish if there was an agony out there at your, you know, at the time that you were going through this stuff and coming out? What would you have said to them? What would you say to kids now?
My big thing was trying to find other gay people. Absolutely. At 14, 15 years old, I couldn't drive. I lived in the suburbs. Where do you find other gay people?
Mm.
And that's a dangerous situation for a 15-year-old to be in, because you start going to overage nightclubs and sneaking in. You perhaps fall in with people who are older than you. You do fall in with people that are older than you. So what I would have wanted to know, and I luckily did actually find a place that was set up. It was minus 18 that was set up for young gay people. But I wanted to know, where are they? Am I the only one?
Right.
And this is in Melbourne. And there are lots and lots and lots of lesbians in Melbourne.
Exactly. I've got an excuse. I was from Tassie. What's going on here?
So, unfortunately, we're completely out of time. And it's been a great show, and there's so much more to talk about. But
I think we're going to cut to a song. And then we're going to come back and tell you what we're going to talk about next week.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.